Attention, attention all personnel. It's MASHcast.
Hello, and welcome to MASHcast, the show that analyzes and celebrates, episode by episode, the greatest TV series of all time, MASH, which aired on CBS from 1972 to 1983, proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm your host, Corporal Captain Rob Kelly, and joining us once again in the VIP tent this week is General Corey Drew.
Well, hey.
You get a promotion if you do two episodes in a row, Corey. That's
well, then I expect you to salute, mister.
So, thank you very much. You're back for a second episode in a row because you're kind of such a fan of one of the actors in this episode. We'll get to that in a moment. But again, thank you for coming back 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah, I love it.
All right. So, the episode we're here to talk about is from, of course, Season 2, Episode 19, The Chosen People. Original air date, January 26th, 1974. It's written by Lawrence Marks, Sheldon Keller, and Larry Gelbart, directed by the dependable Jackie Cooper. A Korean family moves in at the 477th, stating that this is their land and it's the 477th that is trespassing. They start building a house right there in the middle of the compound. One of them is a young woman with a baby who says that the father's address is, quote, MASH 4077. Henry assumes, naturally, it's either Pierce and or McIntyre, but she surprises everyone when she claims that Radar is the father. Henry asks a visiting Captain Pack, played by Pat Morita, for help, but he can't convince the villagers to leave. Henry then tries to get help from HQ's Civilian Affairs Department and asks them to send someone. In the meantime, no one can believe that Radar is the father, which gets him mad. He denies being the father, yet starts acting like one, spending time with the mother and doting on the child. Hawkeye and Trapper take a blood test to get the answer once and for all. Finally, a Lieutenant Harper, played by Dennis Robertson, arrives to investigate the paternity suit, and he sends Radar out of the room. Moments later, Hawkeye and Trapper show up with the results, proving Radar isn't the father. Captain Pack talks to the young girl some more, and she admits that the real father left her, and she's been ostracized by her family. Radar was kind to her one night, so she thanked him by making him the father. Radar then bursts in, telling a tall tale about how he is the father, but then they show him the blood test. Outside, Frank is shoving all the Korean villagers into a truck, sending them further south to be with other refugees. They offer to take the young girl and their baby with them, so she now has a family. Hawkeye asks Radar why he lied, and he admits he liked the way everyone treated him when they thought he did the kind of thing that could have made him the father. He admits, indirectly, that he's a virgin, and he worries that he'll always be one. Hawkeye reassures him that that is not the case, which makes Radar feel better. All right, so Corey, aside from the appearance of Pat Morita as Captain Pack, who is very, very funny in this episode, this is his second and final appearance on the show. Why did you want to talk about this one as well?
Well, one of the things that I really liked about it was Radar's kind of struggle to accept this sort of state of his sexuality. Like that, I don't know that you would see even now. Like in 2019, when we're, you know, putting air quotes with my fingers, progressive about the way we view these kinds of things, I don't know that you would see an adult man with a receding hairline talk about his virginity, even though, you know, Radar never really says the word
no.
Virgin or virginity. He attempts to coyly state, you know, that he doesn't have sex. He, you know, hasn't done that yet. And it's not resolved in the end of the episode, spoilers, for him with him, you know, getting some. Like that, just like that is a really unique perspective in a TV show. And I don't know one that you've necessarily seen repeated, especially, you know, given the era of the show. But even today, it's still not a thing that I can't say that I've necessarily seen it again. Maybe played awkwardly in a science fiction show or something, but I can't even think of one.
Yeah, it's not played for laughs.
No, it isn't.
It's you know, I mean, Gary Berghoff has a really great line read, and we're jumping to the end of the show, but it's a really great scene of where he says, you know, I really liked the way it seemed people treated me when they thought I had, and he's like, you know, I didn't because I never, and he just lets his voice trail off, and he's ashamed of it. You know, he feels even though he is a very gentle soul, And he clearly sort of regards that in a very serious way. I mean, most TV shows that have young men are, there are horn dogs, you know, every show, even shows that I like, all the male characters are always trying to get some, you know what I mean? Like that's their raison d'etre basically. And here you've got a character that's just gentle and is actually trying to do the right thing. Maybe not the right thing, but trying to do what he perceives as the right thing is to take care of this young woman with this born out of wedlock child, even though he himself clearly has no contact with this person. And it turns into a radar show kind of obliquely. You know, I mean, the setup seems like, oh, it's going to be about this Korean family and they have to get them off the compound or whatever, but it really does turn on the character stuff for Gary Berghoff and Radar.
Yeah, he's the central character of this episode for sure, and his character was always one, he was my sort of point of entry, I guess. I related to him far more than I related to anyone else on that show, except for no anyone. There's no one that I related to more on that show than Radar, at least initially, at least as a young child.
Sure.
Not even that young, to be honest with you. Like, you know, so having it be about him, having it be a Radar centric episode, I really liked that, and that was a really enjoyable angle. One of the things that I think, there's a couple different reads on it that you can take, where he does at some point stand up and say, you know, yeah, this is my kid, which, you know, I think the intent is to be noble with it, right? And I think that's a good read of it. But another read of it is that he's so ashamed of his virginity in this army facility that he would take on the responsibility of raising a child and having a wife, rather than own up to his own virginity. So, you know, there's a couple of different angles that are at play there that you can look at it from a couple of different perspectives.
Well, we would see in later shows that Radar is very willing to become a substitute father. He does this in a season 4 episode where there's a soldier that leaves his wife and child, his Korean wife and child behind, and he sort of asks Radar to look after the kid, and Radar takes to the kid immediately, gives the kid his teddy bear. So, you know, Radar is someone who is yearning to be a father, yearning to have a family, and he'll take it whatever version he can get. We don't know that here because it's early on in the show, but it would be a character trait that they would pick up and run with. And, you know, I thought it's interesting you mentioned that, you know, Radar was your kind of like entry character. Because, I mean, look, I certainly was never be cool enough to be Hawkeye or Trapper. I'm just not cool enough now. They were the aspirational characters, but I will say that, you know, the episode that there's an episode in season 3 where Radar talks about that he's a vegetarian and he goes out of his way to save the life of a lamb because he can't bear to see the lamb be killed. And, you know, I have to say that was a pretty big deal to me. And probably informed my later vegetarianism because it sort of, I hooked into that kind of like, oh yeah, I kind of agree with Radar on that. So I won't say that Radar was my entry character as well, but I mean, that was a big moment for me, undoubtedly. And so this is, it's a good show for Radar. I did mention, of course, this is Pat Morita making his second and final appearance as Captain Pack. It's a damn shame that they didn't bring him back more because he's very funny. I mean, everybody knows Pat Morita was funny. I mean, the man had 175 credits.
Astonishing, isn't it?
And he continued appearing in films for 9 years after his death. He had so many films. He's like the Tupac of
it's so much in the
films.
Can, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, of course, everyone remembers him from the Karate Kid films, from Happy Days. He starred on a million TV shows. He was on Sanford and Son. He was just one of those guys that just worked forever. And he's very funny. He fits in with the gang. He's got this very sardonic kind of delivery. There's this whole line where he says, "Well, Colonel, looks like you got trouble right here in Pregnant City," which he's quoting from The Music Man, which actually did not exist at the time of the Korean War, but who cares? But I mean, he's just, and later on when the lieutenant arrives, played by Dennis Robertson, and he's come to investigate the birth, and they originally, Henry thinks he's here to talk to the refugees, and he says, no, which one of them is pregnant? And Pack says, oh, he's here for the flip side, Henry. He's just kind of like completely, and there's even a scene where it's Henry and Father Mulcahy and Captain Pack eating Chinese food, just sitting off to the side on the compound, just eating food, just like having a meal together. He fit in so well that it's a damn shame that they didn't use him more because he's very funny.
It is. It's extremely funny. He's extremely funny. I one of the things that I didn't know about him was that he opened for Red Fox. When Red Fox was primarily a stand-up comic, Pat Morita opened for him.
Wow.
It was his opening act. That astonishes me.
Mr. Miyagi is your opening act.
Yeah. And his manager was Lenny Bruce's mother.
What?
Yeah.
What?
At the TV series, right there. Call your buddies at Netflix and tell them, listen, the Fire and Water Podcast Network says you need to get on this.
That's
make this
a
TV show set in the 1960s with comedians that were deeply, deeply troubled, but incredibly funny. And that whole world, I would watch the heck out of that.
That's amazing.
And Pat Morita was a part of it. And you wouldn't know that because he's played these such sort of beloved sort of surrogate dad character.
Very, very avuncular, yeah. Certainly not edgy, not anything.
Yeah, avuncular for sure.
Yeah.
You never would associate, Arnold
right from Happy Days,
Happy Days with, Lenny Bruce.
That's amazing. The mind reels at that thought. And then again, it's sort of, you think about it, like, well, now you're telling me that it's like, so Pat Morita in his personal life kind of hung with Red Fox and Lenny Bruce. Like, wow, he must have been one hip mother that he could sort of keep up with these guys who were, of course, notoriously foul-mouthed, button pushers and envelope pushers. And Pat Morita was not that guy. He was always, the warm-hearted, father or uncle or, Mr. Miyagi. But yet, nevertheless, he must have been a fun guy to hang out with off the set.
It really just makes you want to know a lot about his life.
You ain't kidding.
You learn some of these facts, yeah.
Yeah, oh my God. The scene opens with the episode opens with Radar playing the trumpet Bailey, as he does, and somebody gets so mad at them that they throw an egg on his face and cracks open. And of course, later on, we would find out that getting a fresh egg at the 477th is like finding plutonium. So that's an incredible waste of a fresh egg.
That's how bad he was.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, they were willing to throw it. And then we cut to a scene in the OR, and that's where we see that Sam is already there. And there's this whole running bit where Hawkeye is trying to learn Korean. And he's saying different things. Yeah. And, and of course, comedy writers cannot help themselves. When you have a character trying to learn a foreign language and they say some line, the line that they're saying is always 180 degrees from what it is they think they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
So in this instance, Hawkeye is saying, what he thinks he's saying is, your presence is welcome in our village. And Sam says, your uncle has gas from too much cabbage. They can never miss that opportunity. But what I love about that scene is they're trying to learn the language and Sam is teaching them. And then Frank, of course, being Frank, jumps in and says, we're not here to have language lessons. Mm-hmm. I speak American. Oy, oy, oy. And they don't even acknowledge that he said anything. And they just keep going. I love that moment. They're like, they don't even give him the dignity of pretending they even heard a word he said. I love that. That, to me, that's the way you treat these people. You just move on. Don't even bother to say, shut up, Frank. You just keep talking. And I love all that.
There was a moment later in the scene there where he says, I speak American and I can go any place in the world. And then somebody responds to him and says, we can have you packed in 20 minutes.
Yeah. He refers to the Koreans as these foreigners.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks,
Frank. This whole episode, the entire episode, start to finish, and everything that happens in the episode. This is, when I was rewatching it recently, it's so startlingly clear when you understand it. It is about colonialism.
Oh yeah,
right. Completely. It is. That's just what it's about. And you know, Frank does this amazing job of representing that sort of, you know, not the idiot American, because that sounds really benign, but ugly American is what I meant to say. Yeah, that sounds, you know, a little benign as well, just in that it's more of a cultural, aren't we gauche kind of, aren't we loud and that kind of thing, but which, you know, sometimes we are, but you know, he's really good at playing that imperialist power. You know, he talks about, you know, it's this whole, you know, it's this whole thing where there's this whole argument being made in the episode about, you know, American assistance versus American insistence, you know, and it goes, it's throughout and it's in every scene, and they use, Pat Morita in a lot of ways, that the scene where they're eating food together,
mm-hmm.
even that scene tells you these Americans are here on Korean soil,
mm-hmm.
right? They're there by maybe not their good graces, but they're there, and they're not being treated aggressively badly by these particular Koreans, you know, so that they should just sort of be aware of that, and that's kind of what there. It is not unclear when you watch this episode that is the point the writers were trying to make. Like, they were saying, look, we don't need to go putting our boots on foreign soil like this. There's a real cost to that. These are the actions that we're taking. And they use Frank to really illustrate that. And they use Pac to sort of illustrate comment on it, I guess. Maybe not illustrate, but comment on it.
He even has a line later on there, the scene in Henry's office where he talks about white people, and he says, I don't know, you all look alike to us. He has that line.
That line, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that is true. That is really what this episode is about. I mean, it's that it's the disruption of these people's lives. This is mm-hmm. their farm. This is what these people need to survive, and here all of a sudden there's a medical unit sitting right on top of it. And then, of course, the whole second storyline about the young girl getting pregnant by mm-hmm. a soldier who then skedaddled. And so, yep. and not only is she saddled with this child, she's then ostracized by her own family for mm-hmm. having a child out of wedlock. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, the Americans are just running roughshod over these people's lives. And of course, you know, Hawkeye and Trapper and Henry are trying to do their best, and Radar. But then you've got Frank, yeah, pushing the whole Fox News line of just, you know, we're Americans. We can do whatever we want. And even he literally refers to them, are you going to let these foreigners mm-hmm. camp out here? And Hawkeye has a line right on the nose where he says, yeah, Frank's right. This is their land. What right do they have to it?
Right.
And he jumps right on it.
Frank even says in that line, you're not allowed to live on an American military base.
Right.
Like, you're not allowed to live
yep.
on an American military. Like that line is just so well written. And, I mean, it's delivered as in, like, in if you don't think about it, it's just going to sound face value. He's just telling them they can't live there,
yep.
right? But you're not allowed to live on an American – all you have to do is move the comma,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
you know? It's such a very crystal clear, well-written message. While I don't think being – over, I don't think it's necessarily meant to come off as anti-American as much as it is meant to come off as anti-occupier.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
You know, absolutely. I think that's you know, that because, you know, there's some lines in there that make you question that, you know, but one of the great lines too is Frank, you know, says that they're there to keep them safe from democracy. the way they write, you know, these little individual throwaway lines, specifically the ones coming from Frank, I just think it's really clever.
Frank always made the subtext text.
Yeah,
we've talked about it in the very previous episode where he says, you know, I'm going to issue my next week's anonymous report. You know, I mean, he just can't help himself. The stuff just burns. It comes out of his mouth because he's an idiot and he doesn't even know what he's saying. And so this story I mentioned, this teleplay is by Lawrence Marks, who was one of the staff writers. Sheldon Keller, who wrote a bunch of matches, and Larry Gelbart, who, of course, was one of the producers. But the story is credited to two writers, Jerry Rennert and Jeff Wilhelm, neither one of which has a whole lot of credits. This is their sole MASH credit. They worked on shows like The Brian Keith Show, The Bob Newhart Show, Super Train, which is my pal Dan Budnick's favorite show, Eight is Enough, and Hunter. So these guys, I don't know, you know, I mean, I never know exactly how this stuff works. Maybe they were just freelance writers and they came up with the story of, hey, what happens if there's this family that moves in and they have to get them off the base? And they're okay, that's enough of a story. All right, thanks. Here's your check. We'll flesh it out into a teleplay. And even the whole bit of that they're this Korean family is underscored by the fact there's a scene where their cow wanders into Henry's tent. And by the way, Henry's tent flap opens from the inside, which is the only time it ever does, because that way the cow could push his way in. But at that moment, of course, Henry is shaving and the cow comes in and he's terrified of this thing because it's a big steer and it's mooing at him or whatever. And Radar has a line, there's a Korean family out here. And Henry says, well, their dog is in
their
here.
Their dog is in here, yeah. So. I couldn't tell what that I guess I was probably thinking a little more deeply than I needed to in while watching this, but that joke, I didn't really know what that joke was meant to be. I just couldn't work that one out.
Yeah. And then amid all of these gags about imperialism and all this stuff, there's another throwaway bit here, which is very strange. There's a moment where, you know, Henry calls the Civilian Affairs Department. And after the Civilian Affairs guy shows up, played by Dennis Robertson. We'll talk about him in a moment. But there's another like division of the army that Henry tries to make some headway with, and he doesn't get anywhere. And so to give Frank something to do, that way Frank is not so obsessed with being a racist jerk. He tells Frank, "Why don't you go talk to him?" The guy makes no sense, and you're very good at that, Frank. And then so we – as we see Henry and Sam and Lieutenant in the background, we see Frank talking to this guy. And if he says he takes it upon himself to talk to HQ, and he gets really chummy with the guy. Yep. And he even says something about, you know, you seem like my kind of person. We should get together after the war.
I think we have a lot in common.
Yeah, we got a lot in common. And then there's this pause, and then Frank says something to the effect of, what? Why and he says, I'm married. I've got kids and everything. And he says, no, I won't call you. Don't you ever call me.
Call me, yep.
And he slams down the phone again, suggesting that, well, of course, we all know what that joke is suggesting. But, I mean, it's Frank, as we'll see in an episode later this season, is thrown into an absolute tizzy when the subject of homosexuality comes up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was great. That was just – that felt like a bit – that they were putting there to pick up again later.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because it was so surplus to requirement, you know, for the episode, you know, other than it was just a scene to give him something to do and something to say. But that whole sequence, you're just like, this is hilarious, because you, when it dawns on him, you see how uncomfortable he's made. you know, and yeah, he doesn't like anybody. He assumes endlessly about everybody else, but he doesn't like anybody assuming anything about him. Mm-hmm. I thought that was fantastic. He also has a great bit earlier where he refers to Radar as a dirty little non-com.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a fun little bit of whoever wrote that line had to know somebody that was like Frank.
Oh, sure.
To come up with that line, because that felt so real. Like that felt like something that like a hyper militaristic, like very, very about the people, you know, very authoritarian would say. Like that sounded very real to me.
And it's very on point with the establishment of Frank as that kind of character. And then we've seen this in people that are like him in daily life, where you know, like Frank loves to think he's sort of like the, you know, representative of real Americans. Mm-hmm. And yet, you know, Radar is the salt of the earth. Radar mm-hmm. is from the heartland. Radar is not an officer, but he's working his way up. He is what everyone is supposed to kind of aspire to be, is that you can come from nothing. You can be a dirt poor farmer in Ottumwa, Iowa, and start rising through the ranks in the military, in the army, because you're so good at your job. You would think that Frank would respect Radar, but he right. doesn't, because he's not an officer. So he immediately has right. that kind of, like, you know, he gives lip service to being, you know, for the little guy, but he actually really hates the little guy, and he insults sure. him by calling him a dirty little non-com, as if that's something to be ashamed of.
Right. Yeah. He feels you know, he feels not just militarily superior, but like ethically superior,
morally superior, morally, yeah. socially yeah. superior. Everything about him is superior to Radar. The guest actors here, there's a bunch of them. We have, as I mentioned, we have Dennis Robertson, who plays Lieutenant Harper. He had a bunch of TV credits like Columbo, Cannon, L.A. Law, Dallas, McMillan and Wife, Rockford Files, Waltons, and appeared in a season 5 episode of Cheers. So Ryan Daly will be getting to him in a couple of years. Claire Torau, I'm not sure if I'm saying that right, T-O-R-A-O, who plays Chun Hee. The one with the baby. She was in the movie 48 Hours with Eddie Murphy. Oh. Great movie. Cujo, Cobra, Trapper John M.D. A lot of these actors are in Trapper John M.D. and Saint Elsewhere. The father of this family, Jerry Fujikawa, appeared in 7 different episodes of MASH, plus the Alan Alda movie The Extraordinary Seaman, which I covered with Sean Ross last season just because of the title.
As you do.
And then the little boy, the one who is constantly shining everybody's boots.
Dollar for Shine Joe.
Shine Joe. this kid's name is J.J. Jew. J-A-Y-J-A-Y-J-U-E, which is one of the greatest names I've ever seen. J.J. Jew. That's fantastic. He has just a handful of credits. He was on the show Kung Fu and The Amazing Chan and the Chan Clan. So kind of a fun thing. We noticed that there is no Margaret in this episode. She does not appear here. No Klinger as well. Funnily enough, there is no Margaret in the other Captain Pack episode, Deal Me Out. So even though Pat Morita guest starred on 2 episodes of a TV show that Loretta Swit was a regular cast member on, she probably has never met Pat Morita because she happened to be not in either one of these episodes. So it's just sort of the strange luck of the draw that she was never around when Captain Pack was.
Do you wonder if, like, in sitting down to write this episode, and, you know, I'm ascribing thoughts to people I don't know, but I wonder if when they're writing this episode, they think to themselves, you know, Margaret, there's a level of antagonist that Margaret can be, right? She can't be Frank Burns level.
No, she was right? always more gentle with the Korean,
make her horrifically racist.
Yep.
And authoritarian, and saying that about Frank, he is the one who comes up with the get out of jail free card for Radar, as it happens. But you know, I wonder if when they were writing that, they're like, well, if we put her in a scene with Frank, his taint, for lack of a better word, is going to get on her. I wonder if maybe they, knowing that they planned on making her have complicated relationships with everybody on the show, and didn't want her to be, you know, a scumbag like he was being in this episode. I wonder if maybe that's why they opted to leave her out.
Well, I know that she was doing Loretta Swit, of course, who was a guest on this very show. She was in a lot of plays. She did a lot of stuff in a lot of theater. And so she was frequently not available for certain episodes of the show. Now, that doesn't mean that when they were, lining up the scripts, they didn't, you know, look at the schedule and say, well, okay, Loretta is not available from this day to this day. Oh, you know what? This would be a good time to do this one because mm-hmm. we don't have a great room for Margaret in this story. So it could be a little bit of both, you know, that they kind of looked at and said, well, there's going to be a couple in any given year that we can't write Margaret into. We don't need her here. You know, we don't need to put her in this one. So let's leave her. Because you're right. That's something I liked about their ongoing beats with that character is that they always – even though she is a martinet and she's military and she's a rat a lot of the ways that Frank is, she's much more gentle towards the Koreans. In every episode, and the Kim, which we covered earlier on in the season, we see that she's teaching the young boy how to speak Korean. She's reading books to him. So she is along with Frank with a lot of his horrendous beliefs, except for when it comes to his xenophobia. She's not. Yeah. She doesn't sign up to that. And I think that's because Loretta Swit just has an inherent sweetness, and I just think it wouldn't have played as well.
Right. Yeah. I think that. That some episodes are just, you know, a bunch of good time Charlies dropping one-liners, you know what I mean, and playing, you know, Home Alone style pranks and trying to get under the skin of the square, you know, Major Burns and stuff like that. And then some of the episodes are genuinely trying to flex a muscle and make a point. Mm-hmm. This felt more like the latter than the former by a lot. So, like every when that's the case, every little decision I see, I wonder on it. You know what I mean? I think on it. Like I wonder if that's if there was anything other than, well, she's not available for this episode, which also makes you wonder if she was in the episode, what would they have done with her? And I'd almost think that she would have been telling Frank off because she did that from time to time.
She did. Yeah, she would have been much less. She probably would have been, you know, okay with helping out this family or whatever. But yeah, there's just no room for her here, and so it worked out that she was off doing other things, and so we didn't need her in this story. This show ends with one of the great the second act break, where it ends basically the end of the show before we get the little bumper. To me, this has one of the best final act breaks the show ever did, because there's no jokes. It's the moment where Radar admits to Hawkeye that, you know, he says he never has had sex, and you know, he's kind of a little ashamed of that, and he liked the way people treated him when they thought that he did. And there's even a scene in the mess tent where he's sitting down with the Korean woman and the baby, and we see a couple of the nurses, including Bobby Mitchell, Nurse Mitchell, and they're kind of giggling and looking over at Radar and kind of making slightly googly eyes at him. I mean, it's the classic, you know, you start becoming more attractive to women once you look like you're not available.
Right.
So, you know, I think we all know that pain. And but in that final scene with Hawkeye, and we're going to dovetail perfectly into my favorite line in this episode. It's not particularly a line, but there's this moment where Radar worries aloud whether he will ever not be a virgin, basically. And Hawkeye says, oh, you will. And then Radar says, you think? And Alan Alda responds with this wonderfully charming, shruggy, affirmative yes. But he never actually says anything. He just kind of goes, huh. Like, almost like, what a ridiculous question, but in a nice way. Right. Like, he is so confident that Radar will meet a nice girl someday, and he just I mean, there is no way you can write that line. Yeah. As much as I love the MASH writers, and they are brilliant writers, there's no way to write that line. That is Alan Alda. I would bet that's Alan Alda 1,000%. Just that kind of like, huh, you know, and I'm not even doing service to it, how good it is. Go to Hulu where they have the MASH and go find this episode and just watch that scene of just the way he is just so sweet to Radar of like, oh, of course. I know you're stressed about this, but of course you are going to have this in your life. And it's just such a sweet moment. And it's my favorite line of – even though it's not a line, it's my favorite moment of this episode.
Yeah, that was a great moment. And one of the things that I find interesting about that whole sequence like shortly thereafter, he and Trapper tell him to wear the
his paratrooper scarf.
Yeah, and it's just interesting because that end where the women the nurses sort of eye him up.
Yeah, well, Nurse Mitchell says, "Who are you going with the movies to tonight?"
Yeah, exactly. And that whole sequence, it's just interesting how they don't. They don't give you, you know, him becoming like a Mac all of a sudden.
Oh, right.
You know
what I mean? No, he's still petrified by female attention. Yeah.
Right. Because, you know, at the end, he can wear all the paratrooper scarves he wants. He's not a paratrooper.
No, right.
You know, and it just like, I just really, I thought that that was, that was good. It was honest storytelling. Like, you know, they weren't like, you know, years later, I think maybe they might have had a different ending, but I think in these early days, that was the ending I would expect from this kind of episode of MASH, you know, yeah. Where they're like, where he's like, you know, yeah, he has a different message kicking around in his head, but he's still him.
Yeah. Oh, Radar's story about supposedly where he got together with Chun-Hee is classic, because then I think, you know, I don't know about you, Corey, but I mean, I think a lot of us out there can relate to trying to sound more experienced about certain things than we really were, and not having any idea how to make that sound palatable or real. And you've got that bit where Radar says that he went down to this bar and he met Chun-Hee, and he says he was wearing his paratrooper scarf with nothing on underneath, which to Radar sounds incredibly saucy, which of course is just utter gibberish.
And it two beers.
It just I had a beer, and it reminds me a lot of that scene from 40-Year-Old Virgin, where Steve Carell is playing the card game, and he's talking about breasts feeling like bags of sand, and the guys are just like, "What the hell are you talking about?" So it's a very, very true to life. So I mean, like I said, I've been there, Radar. So I appreciated that. So yeah, I think it's just it's a really, and again, I love that in an episode mostly about Radar. I love that they give Alan Alda that moment, and the warmth he has for Radar mm-hmm. is so palpable. It's just great. Do you have a particular favorite line?
Yes, I do. And it is delivered by Pat Morita. And it's not even necessarily a particularly cleverly written line. However, given a couple of sort of meta things about this episode and about Pat Morita, I thought it was really good. Pat Morita, notably not Korean, Japanese, and in fact, actually born in the United States. He's an American citizen.
He was born in California.
Born in California, of Japanese descent, spent quite a bit of time interned as a child during the Second World War in Arizona, and hired, taking jobs as he could, playing whomever he could, in this instance playing a Korean captain. There's a scene where Henry asks him about suicide, and he says that that's the Japanese. We don't do that shit.
That's right, yeah.
Like, he's got this moment where he gets to say, we're not all the same.
Right.
And I know that you think we are, but we are not all the same. And I am, you know, he's pointing out that there's differentiation there. And I thought that was, you know, again, he gets it later in a more literal sense where, you know, he turns around and says, you all look the same to us.
Right, right, right.
You know, but that moment, him delivering that line, I think is just pretty fantastic.
And referring to it as shtick, which is a great kind of...
Right, which is a great, like, Borscht Belt.
Yeah,
you know, which harkens to his history, you know what
right,
I mean?
Exactly.
That whole 60s, 50s, 60s comedian shtick.
Yeah.
Like a bit of, that so sort of multicultural, cross-culture line, a lot gets built into that line because he's the one delivering it.
Yep.
And he's playing that character, you know, so that line is given a lot more depth and layers. So that's my favorite line. It's not the funniest or the most well-written, but metatextually and within the context of this episode in particular and what this episode is about, I just thought it was fantastic.
Oh, it is great. I mean, like I said, the Pat Morita's first appearance was in Deal Me Out a couple episodes ago, which is, as I said, is my favorite episode of the season. And to me, in a parallel world, if I had worked on the MASH show, I would have said, guys, we need to do a poker show every season. Every season where Captain Pack and Sydney and maybe even Colonel Flagg show up and we just play cards. That's like, instead of a clip show, every season we're going to do one bottle episode where they just play poker. And I would want to have seen Captain Pack come back multiple times. He's great in this. I mean, he only does the two, but he's very, very funny, and he gets a lot of great lines here. And one final note of sort of interesting cultural appropriation, or maybe not, but in the scene, as I mentioned, where we see Henry and Father Mulcahy and Sam sitting eating Chinese food on the just literally sitting on the dirt of the compound, Sam is eating his food with a fork, while Henry and Father Mulcahy are using chopsticks. Which I thought
I noticed that. Yeah, isn't that fantastic?
So.
Yeah.
It's a great episode. And you mentioned, you mentioned a couple of minutes ago about how there were some shows that are just, joke machines. And then there are some shows that have a little more of a cultural relevance. And you got to cover both. Because that's Operation right. Nose Lift is just a big scam episode. It's just a bunch. Yep. It's really just a bunch of gags. And then you've got this one, which has a lot more on its mind. So it's perfect. You got to do the alpha and omega of kind of the approach to MASH. If it wasn't for a war, we'd be having a really good time. So,
you mentioned in the previous episode about how the directors don't always get a chance to do these like fantastic shots.
Right. Yeah, they have to pretty much just shoot the thing as it's set.
That opening moment in this episode, looking out over the Korean countryside, aka Southern California, with the sun, up in the sky and the American flag. And it was such a cinematic moment. And then to have it broken by Radar's horrible reveille, that was a great moment for a director. And I didn't want to let, this review end without bringing that up, because that you're right. We don't necessarily get to see a lot of those, but that was a beautifully shot scene.
Yeah. Good job, Jackie Cooper.
Yeah, that was like one of those way too cinematic to be sort of trapped on a little sort of oblate spheroid TV screen.
right, in this tiny little set 20 feet away in the middle of this giant brown credenza, that you were stuck with back then. There's like this tiny screen and there's a whole lot of stuff around it. But yeah, it's sort of funny. Of course, realize that without really planning on it, the Fire and Water Podcast Network is really kind of becoming like the Jackie Cooper Network because it's over on Superman Movie Minute. Chris Franklin and I are waxing Jackie Cooper's car because he's playing Perry White in those movies. Yeah. And so, he's doing a great job as a director and a great job as an actor. So we're Jackie Cooper's all over the place. And I like to think that somewhere he knows that and is happy. So that's going to do it for this episode of MASHcast. Corey, thank you so much for doing two shows in a row. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, for sure. I enjoy it.
All right. So, of course, if you want to leave comments on this episode or any other episode, go to our website, which is fireandwaterpodcast.com. You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts and on Stitcher. We're always talking MASH over on Twitter, which is at MASH477cast. And, of course, you can support the Fire and Water Podcast Network on our Patreon, which is patreon.com/FW Podcast. And if you contribute above a certain level, you can name what show you want to get a shout out on. And as we did in the last episode, I have to thank our pal Nicholas Prom from the Comic Reflections podcast, who asked to be name checked on MASHcast. Of all the shows he could have mentioned, he mentioned MASHcast. So thank you very much, Nicholas, for your support. And like I said, if you want to support what the Fire and Water Podcast Network does and helps keeps the lights on, metaphorically, go to patreon.com/FW Podcast. So that's going to do it. Once again, it's always fun talking to my pal Corey, and he will obviously be back very soon. So thanks everybody for listening, and until next week, that is all.
Father, speak nice to me, like wind song.
Well, some of our guys can really shovel the old wind song.
Oh, his father not just guy. Huh? He doctor. MASH 4077.
Well, that's our phone number. And you say he could really talk up the old wind song, eh? Pierce and/or McIntyre.